Many years ago, a friend of mine was doing an ethics paper at university. One of the issues she was grappling with was if we could genetically engineer a chicken that liked living in a cage, would it be okay to eat eggs from those genetically engineered chickens without any guilty conscience about the fact that they suffered laying eggs in a cage? Well, I was thinking of her as I prepared for this interview with Canterbury University Associate Professor Christoph Bartnik, who is also the brains behind the Human Robot Interaction podcast. He's been asking, is robot abuse immoral or wrong? Which, for some reason, made me think of this internet sensation. I don't know if you remember, that was the German kid who lost it at his own computer keyboard. So he was abusing that keyboard. It was an internet sensation, I don't know, about 10 years ago. Anyway, is it out of order to call a robot names? And remember, in terms of intelligence, the difference between the computer and the World Wide Web and a robot? Well, maybe there's not much difference. Is it wrong to call a robot names or to push it down the stairs or attack it with an acetylene torch? Christoph, along with PhD student Meryl Kaisers, have published a paper called The Morality of Abusing a Robot. Christoph is on the line now. Kia ora, Christoph. Welcome to Nights.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I wonder if we perhaps could begin by defining what a robot is first in terms of this discussion.
Well, we all roughly have an idea what it is, but if you would actually start to drill in what exactly we mean by it, it gets, as usually, very, very, very complicated, because your washing machine is a robot because it has sensors, it has actuators, it has a microprocessor in there. So a lot of things would suddenly become robots that you would normally not think about being a robot. But the one thing that we have in mind when we do our studies is robots that are shaped pretty much like humans, so in a humanoid or an android robot.
Yeah. Because as I was going to say, I mean, a lot of us have been guilty of being violent to machines over the years. A washing machine might be one thing that I might have kicked when possibly it was my fault, of course, but the washing machine overflowed. So, you know, we often do exhibit violence towards machines, but you are more interested in robots that, well, look a bit human.
Indeed. So we particularly look at robots that are built to interact with human beings. And the example that you just had on, I mean, actually, I didn't remember the particular internet episode, but I've seen similar videos of people getting angry at their computer. And the fascinating thing is that most often they hit the keyboard. That is not the computer. The computer would be the box on the ground or somewhere. That's the computer.
Yeah.
So people hit the interface, which is kind of an interesting take on it. But yeah, so the robots that we indeed look at is more robots are designed to interact with humans. You have a lot of robots that are in factories that are doing manufacturing work, and that's not what we're interested in. The ones that we look at is the ones that are designed to interact with humans.
How did you go about approaching this question?
Well, I guess it would be worthwhile to spend a few moments talking about, how actually I've ever came up with this particular study. And so, Brian, are you familiar with Boston Dynamics?
Boston Dynamics, as in the city of Boston?
I'm not quite sure where they're located. They are in the US, but they are one of the leading manufacturers of robots. And
right.
They've built humanoid robots and most recently a dog-shaped robot.
Okay, basically no.
Okay, well, you might want to look that up. It's kind of the most amazing robots that you currently have. They do most amazing physical things, like even running parkour and doing saltos. It's really quite amazing. And what they typically do is, like, every once in a while they make a video in which they demonstrate the abilities of their latest robot. So, and one of the videos they made is they want to demonstrate how their robot is able to recover its balance. So if it, for example, gets pushed, that it can stretch out its legs, balance itself, and get back on its feet. And it also had a video where the robot had a box and it was carrying the box, and they had a hockey stick and they smacked the box down on the ground, and the robot was able to find the box, pick up the box. And that sounds all very easy to us as humans, but for a robot, these are really difficult tasks.
Yeah.
So these tech demos were essentially a means for them to showcase their great, amazing technology.
While you've been talking, I've actually put up on YouTube or found one of Boston. I'm pretty sure it's Boston Dynamics. The robots are yellow, the ones I'm looking at, and yes, they're very impressive. They look a little bit sort of dog-like.
That's Spotty. Yeah. The one that you have is Spotty. That's their most recent creation. The one that we had a particular look at is called Atlas, and that's more of a human-shaped robot. And one of the things that happened is that when they had these really popular videos and people started to comment and they felt sorry for the robot. So when it got pushed and kicked and people started to comment on like, hey, this poor little robot, that's why are you doing this? Which is kind of the core question here, really, about how do we relate to these machines. So then another US company called Corridor Digital, they came up with the idea of making yet another video like this, and they pushed it further. They did not just do a kicking, but they pushed this abuse much further. And you always think like, hey, wait a minute, they smack the wine bottle on top of the robot, or they smash a chair against its back. I mean, what's going on here? And this was really shocking video to see. And eventually they revealed that this was actually a spoof. They were just trying to, fool people in believing that this was actually made by Boston Dynamics. It wasn't, it was made by them. So that was an interesting example. But what they had to do to make this special effects video was to capture the motion. And to do that, they had a human being, an actor. And they actually smashed a bottle, one of those special bottles, on the head of this actor and captured the motion of this actor. And this motion was then used to animate a digital version of the Atlas robot. Now, if you look at these two videos, it's the same. It's practically the same thing. It's just in one video, you see the human, and in another video, you see the robot. And we never had this kind of high fidelity videos before, because in our lab, I mean, we cannot afford to trash a robot. They're just far too expensive. So it's a little bit impractical. We've done it in the past. We did actually a study where we had people take a hammer and smash robots, but these were really, really cheap robots. So yeah, if you wanted humanoids, that's just far too expensive. So anyway, so we had this really great video material, and I contacted the company and asked, hey, could we please have these videos and also the original human version, because then we can use this in an experiment where we can show these videos to people and ask them, how do they feel about this? And particularly, what's the moral aspect of it? Is it okay to do this, or is it not okay? And if so, how much? And that was the basic structure of the experiment, where people would see either a human or robot being abused, and then we would ask them, well, what is the ethical aspect? How do you feel about this? And it turned out that people did not distinguish a human or a robot. So the abusive behavior to either of them was equally dismissive. So, which is interesting, because this particular, it doesn't matter if it's a computer graphics or a robot, but it doesn't matter. The robot has no emotions. It has no pride. It doesn't even have any understanding of abuse. It doesn't know. It doesn't care. You can rip out its arm, it wouldn't care. So it makes absolutely no sense to feel sorry for it, because it doesn't need to. It doesn't have to. So
did that result surprise you?
Yeah, I did. I mean, we were kind of guessing it would go in this direction. But the question is always how much, because this behavior really can only be explained in social terms, because we did actually some extra things. In one of the videos, for example, we included verbal abuse, which was not in the original video. And again, this behavior is only meaningful if you consider it to be a social gesture. So in that sense, yeah, it was surprising. But what was even more surprising is in the second phase of the experiment. So in the videos, in the original spoof video, what actually happens is that the robot starts to fight back. it actually grabs the hockey stick and smashes it on the ground and eventually, you know, brings out the abuser on gunpoint out of the building. Well, we couldn't take that part in the video, but nevertheless, the robot started to fight back. And then the question was, well, if a human got abused and fights back, it's also a form of aggression. I mean, it's still fighting back, it's still aggression, but of course it has a pre-story to it. Versus a robot being abused and then fighting back, is that again same? And in this condition, when we compare these two, there was a difference. So suddenly a robot fighting back was actually less moral. It was less acceptable for the robot to fight back than the human. So there humans started to make a difference.
This seems like now we've got two irrationalities going on here. First, we're slightly irrational in ascribing feelings to a robot. Then, when it fights back, we don't like that. What do you read into that? What's your explanation for that?
I don't think that we can necessarily be particularly proud of our rational thinking. It's probably one of the more recent additions to our brain. So we do indeed act towards these machines in a way that we are trained and we are kind of built. So the only other example we have of entities that act with intention and maybe even have the ability to use speech are either other animals or humans. So therefore, when we suddenly have a machine that acts and with intention, we automatically almost ascribe these kind of human-like traits and abilities
to the robot. We anthropomorphize. We're doing the old anthropomorphizing thing.
Yeah, that's and, the one we word care. I have we to use so often and I can never really pronounce
yes,
well.
Nor can I. But I got it out. We won't have to say it again, perhaps. And the thing is, though, there you are feeling, oh, it's not on that robot is getting whacked. And I can imagine myself feeling that way. And then when the robot stands up for itself, we feel scared. Or we don't like that. Maybe, well, that's the thing. Are we afraid? Are we afraid that if a robot stands up for itself, the next thing they're all coming for us and we're doomed? Am I drawing too long a bow there?
Well, this is what we in the field of robotics call the Frankenstein complex. So you get this story repeated all over again. It's always like the robot uprising. And yeah, I'm personally quite bored by this story because that seems to be the only thing. We actually, in the past, we've done a dedicated study where we try to dig into it, like why are people afraid of robots? And we then looked in particular into, is it physical superiority, the mental superiority that would scare people. So that's indeed something very interesting. And in a way, it's a matter of, well, I have the interpretation that in the past, when, let's say, a higher civilization met a less civilized society, it usually didn't end up well for the less civilized civilization. And we kind of project our own behavior that we had in the past towards these robots. So the assumption is if they become stronger and smarter than us, then there's actually the only thing to do for them is to enslave us. So the idea that when you're smarter, you might actually also be better and also maybe be kinder and maybe also be more good and ethically, that doesn't really cross our minds. We automatically assume the worst.
Yeah, you know, that's a very interesting point because I was going to ask you about this, and that is that a lot of the pop culture models of machines and humans, things like Matrix or Terminator, but I was thinking of another one, actually. It's outside of that, and it's, I don't know if you remember a film called Moon, in which the artificial intelligence, a robot, looks after a cloned human who's doomed to die. And it's the robot's empathy when the human has been abandoned by whoever humans back on Earth, as he's stuck there on the dark side of the moon doing some mining operation. It's the robot that shows the empathy and helps the human to escape. That's the other possibility, isn't it?
Well, that is actually a very good movie. So I used to teach a course on science fiction movies, and I used to use this as an example of a really good science fiction movie, highly underrated. And I don't know why it was not more popular, because it's actually a really brilliant movie. But indeed, that was a good example. Well, see, the tricky part is that programming a robot to express emotions is actually quite easy. You just have to mimic humans. And then people get fooled in the belief that the robot actually has emotions. That's actually a very easy thing to do. The more tricky part is for a robot to recognize the emotions of humans. That is much harder. And of course, then the third component is to be able to process this information. So the idea is that you perceive the emotion of your interaction partner, you process this information, and then you express your own inner state. And all of this can be modeled in software. It's actually reasonably easy. The real question, a philosophical question, of course, is if that really constitutes emotion. Like, is there something to the experience of emotions that is different that you cannot model mathematically? And to some degree, that's a philosophical question, and that we don't really have a good answer for. But what we do observe in the series of experiments that we do at the HIT Lab is that we look at, well, how do people respond to robots? And what we see there is that people respond to these robots as if they are social actors, as if they have emotions, and as if they are a representation of somebody else. So I could build a robot that looks like you, Brian. How would you feel about that?
Probably slightly disturbed.
Okay. Now think this through. What if I would take this robot home and, let's say, I'll give it a good whack every evening?
Now I'm feeling really creeped out.
Well, why? It's just a robot.
I know.
Why does it matter?
I know, but I'm giving you an honest... I'm feeling my guts here. This is what my guts are telling you.
Well, so it has already happened. People have in the past already created, for example, there's one example of Bina 42 where somebody made a robotic copy of his dead wife. That has happened. Hiroshi Ishiguro made a copy of himself and of his daughter and of other people. So making copies of people is possible. And then the question is, if you act towards these robots, what does it say about you when you, for example, if I take a hockey stick and abuse the Brian robot,
yeah,
what does that say about me,
well,
and what does it say about you?
Christoph, we've only got about 45 seconds left, so I'd love to talk longer, but we've got the sampler coming up. But can I just ask you, when you ask yourself that question, what answer do you come up with in 30 seconds?
A robot is a representation of humans, maybe a specific human, maybe the Brian human. And if we act towards it, we act towards a representation. And if we act poorly, that reflects also poorly on us. So from a virtue ethics point of view, we're not doing so great if we do this. We'd actually be a much better human if we treat other humans and other representations of humans well. So I think we should be gentle to robots, and there's no reason to believe that robots would want to do us any harm if they ever did get to be smarter or stronger than us.
Christoph, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
That's Christoph Bardenhead, Canterbury University Associate Professor, and the brains behind the Human-Robot Interaction Podcast.